Okay, so as I mentioned briefly before, today I figured we would, normally we try to cover topics, get maybe a broad perspective on the issue. Today we're not going to do that because I wanted to do a shiur in memory of Reb Nachum Rabinovich, who passed away last week, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Ma'alei Adumim for 40 years, and before that, did a lot of things. But at some point, he was also a rabbi in Toronto in Clanton Park Synagogue. So my years in Toronto, people knew him from back in the day when he was rabbi there and when he was getting his PhD in U of T in applied mathematics in probability in the Talmud. I forget who borrowed his dissertation from me. I think Ray Duker has it for me, but what that job is when people were in Efrat and people borrowed books from me, someone borrowed his dissertation. So he passed away last week. B'seiva tova. It's tragic, but he lived a very long, productive life. He was 92. You should ask Rav Yoni to give you some of his thoughts about him. You have him on a regular basis. We had the one guest share for the Migdal guys, but I asked him to speak a little bit about Reb Rabinovich. So I figured I would take one of his positions and really try to understand it, both from the social perspective, like what drove him to this position, and the halachic arguments he make, and really just deconstruct his position. So I'm sure at some point you've heard in some forum or another about the conversion problem in Israel. I don't know what you've heard of it, but you've definitely heard about it in some way, I assume, right? In some way, you know that there's an issue. But basically, the issue really began when, with the fall of the Soviet Union, when hundreds of thousands of Russian Jews and Russian non-Jews, but who qualified as Jews, not halachically, but according to law of return, moved to Israel. And at this point, we're dealing with, let's say, second, maybe more generation of those people who've returned. Many of them identify as Israeli, maybe Jewish culturally, in at least insofar as Israel is a Jewish state, and therefore just participating in the country, in the educational system, in the army. There's Jewish culture in the air, so they are proud of that. But many of them are not halachic, and that gets complicated because they want to marry other people that they know, that they meet in the army, they meet in university, and halachically they may not be Jewish. So there's the halachic problem exacerbated by the political problem that there is no civil marriage in Israel. So if you can't get married halachically, you can't get married at all, right? There is no other option in Israel. This is one of those holdovers from, it's actually not from the British, it's even before the British, it's from the Ottoman period, where marriage was under religious authorities, and that's continued to be true since the Ottoman Empire. So the combination of them feeling Jewish or Israeli, and especially Chilonim, but even Datim, being connected to them and potentially wanting to get married with them, has created this problem of how to deal with it. And many different solutions have been offered. So one sort of direction that's been taken is to try to convert as many of them as possible. And well, what if they don't want to be Mekayim mitzvot? So there's some who've engaged in subterfuge. There's some who've claimed, based on interesting halachic argumentations, that Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot is not actually necessary. Others have argued that Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot is necessary, but it just needs to be that they're sincere at the moment of conversion. And if you get them to that point where they're inspired and they're sincere at the moment of conversion, the fact that realistically they're not planning on keeping mitzvot is irrelevant. Others have lowered the bar of what is defined as Kabbalah at Ol Mitzvah. They've all been different attempts. And like I said, to fully go through all the different positions is more than one shiur. And, you know, we could do another week on it, I guess. But Rebbe Rabinovich had been the main halachic name behind. I'll summarize the solution, and then we'll spend the next 50 minutes trying to understand where it comes from. The possibility of converting the children of these paternally Jewish Russian women, who, so obviously they're not Jewish, because, right, they're only paternally Jewish, meaning not halachically Jewish, converting their children as children. And the argument is that even if Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot is required for an adult conversion, it's not for the conversion of a child, because there is a category in the Gemara of Ger Katan of a minor who converts, where the conversion is done under the auspices of Beit Din, and it's not done through the normal mechanism of Kabbalat Mitzvot, because a child does not have the ability to accept Mitzvot. Rather, it's done under the assumption that being a Jew is a zchut, being a Jew is a benefit, and since there's a category in halacha of zachin adam shelo b'fanav, that you can provide benefit to someone even without their knowledge, so that the Beit Din can decide to convert this child. And they do have the ability when they are bar or bat mitzvah to renege, but realistically, that's not happening in Israel, because these Russians want, and Russian descendants, want to be Jewish. Right? They want to be recognized as Jews. So you're not going to get a formal rejection. So you, in order to say that it doesn't work, you'd have to say that the fact that they don't intend to keep mitzvot is a de facto rejection of Judaism. But there's definitely a much stronger argument to be made that one can convert these people as children, because then you don't have to really play with Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot so much. You just have to, right? Clearly, the original conversion works. It's under the auspices of Beit Din. The question is going to be whether they're not keeping Mitzvot at Bar Mitzvah is or Bat Mitzvah is a rejection of Judaism. And there's a lot of room to say, well, look, they're not actively rejecting Judaism, or they're keeping whatever mitzvah chiloni does, right? Meaning they're not anti-religious, they're just chilonim, like other chilonim, and therefore they keep a little bit of Pesach and a little bit of Rosh Hashanah and a little bit of Yom Kippur and a little bit of Hanukkah. So they don't keep all the mitzvah, but you can't call that a rejection. Meaning maybe that's not enough to convert someone if you require a Kabbalat mitzvot, but for a child, where what we need is for him or her not to reject the notion of Judaism, so that might suffice, right? That's sort of the general contours of the argument. And like I said, what I want to do is trace through the argument as Rebbe Rabinovich developed it, because he really was the major name behind it. Rebbe David Stav is heavily involved, the chief rabbi of Shoham, then of Tzohar. He's very heavily involved in this, but the real powerhouse halachic name behind it, Rebbe Stav did not have to put his name on it alone. He had Rebbe Rabinovich, and Rebbe Rabinovich was fearless, right? Meaning once he was convinced something was right, he could not care less what anybody else said. That was just who he was. He was very, 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 very smart. He was, you know, he was not young by the time he was making these decisions. And when you're, you know, very smart, no, Kalata Rakula have written a comprehensive work on all of Rambam, plus several volumes of Shut and a Sefer on Machshava. I've been Rosh Yeshiva for 40 years, have a PhD, right? And you're 92. I don't know what there is to be scared of. You know, you can sort of put your name on it if you believe in it. And he really wasn't afraid to share his halachic position, act on it. So let's just go through this and try to understand it. So what I have here first is not a halachic piece. This is an opinion piece, a newspaper article, which is more of a popular piece, trying to understand or explain why he came to the position that he did. And then we'll look at some of the halachic arguments. But this is his, you know, there's some halachic argumentation here, but this is for a popular audience. This is not his formal justification for it. So he writes, the article was called B'chol Yer Ve'ir, and he says Tkuma Medina Yisrael V'Kibbutz HaGaliot Ma'amidim Anachnu Chadashim L'Vkarim V'Bnei Et Karim Asher Chelak Mehem Kshurim L'Yisodotea Shel HaYahadut. The ingathering of the exiles, the state of the creation of the state of Israel, right? He was also a diehard Zionist, as every day gives us new challenges that are connected to the very essence of Judaism. As Etgarim Adorshim Etmodedut Hilchatit, which challenges which require dealing with it from a halachic perspective, Achrayut Tziburit, communal responsibility, Umabat Hilchatit Tziburi, and a perspective which is both halachic and communal. One of these central issues is conversion. Years ago, who would have thought that the Soviet Union would just dissolve? That Jews could leave? And this led to a wave of Olim who have contributed to the establishment, to the strengthening of the state. But simultaneously, but it brought with it all of the assimilation that was inherent in Soviet Jewry. You have a lot of intermarriage, where even the Jewish partner knows nothing in Judaism, not Shabbos, not Kashrus, nothing. Now, even in this first paragraph, you see certain things about Rebbe Rabinovich, right? You see his firm belief and valuing of Zionism, right? I mean, that's part of his framing here, is that there is a Jewish state, these Russian immigrants who identify as Jewish have contributed, and this is a welcome part of the Jewish state, even if it admittedly creates halachic issues, right? And that is sort of a starting point for him in terms of his worldview. The second thing you see is the extent to which he is fully aware of the fact that this is a community-oriented psak, and it needs a leader who understands how to deal with national issues, has a wider, broader perspective to deal with it. And that's what he starts with. Then he says, Hamatzav shenigleinu litocho murkav. He said, I gotta admit, the situation we're in is complicated. Michad, on the one hand, midubar banashim she'en legabayhem chezgad yahadut, or she'en mugdarim kiyudim al pi halacha. We have a lot of people, either we don't know if they're Jewish, we have no evidence, or we know they're not Jewish halachically. Umeidach, him bacharum yirtzam listapech lam Yisrael. On the other hand, willingly, they joined the Jewish nation. So, right, you have this problem. Halachically, they're not Jewish. So, societally, they are Israeli and identify with the Jewish people. Right, they're involved in the army, Jewish society, Israeli society. Some of them send their children to religious schools. So you have this large group of people who feel part of society, but they're outsiders within. So the obvious solution is conversion. He said, look, converting the adults, this is quite complicated. And the adults don't always want to convert. Ulam, kayam masul acher, but there is this other path. Shigam b'mishra yelchati, v'gam b'mishra ma'asi u'pashut yoter. And we've talked about this before, that you see all the factors of halacha coming together, right? He says, this is the best choice, halachically and practically. Because halacha lima'aseh is, if you remember all the way to the beginning of the year, we said it's understanding the sugya, which means both how you understand in the poskim and minhag, dealing with sharat chak issues that push you in a certain direction, and applying it to the mitziyut. So here we haven't yet gotten to his halachic analysis, but right off the bat, he's told you this is sharat chak, and therefore this requires sharat chak as thinking. And the second is we need something that doesn't just work theoretically, which is, oh, why don't you just inspire every Soviet Jew to become Haredi? No, that's not, right, a solution. We need one that works b'mitziyut, or that's not a psak. I mean, that's a theoretical psak. That's not a psak l'maaseh. It's not going to happen. So he says, this is what I have. If I start today, this will solve the problem down the line. The solution is converting the children. And I should note that it wasn't just this theoretically. Towards the end of his life, just in the last few years, he actually helped set up a Beit Din for Giyur outside the confines of the Rabbanut. So they were doing this l'ma'aseh. So he says, the poskim talk about how conversion is an important issue, even an adult issue. It is essential to establishing society. And they use this to explain why it is that even though there's no Beit Din anymore, with smicha we allow conversion because it's so essential to Judaism to allow conversion. It had to exist at all times. Me'ata, if that's the case, im afilu al kabbalah shel ger mevugar yachid katvuken kol shekein al giur ketanim. But that's true of adults for sure. These kids, shekein yesh bo takanat chufa l'tovanat zibur kolo. The whole community needs it. Im bnei ador sheni lo olim mibrinam oichel lo yigeru kedin. If the second generation of the Soviet olim don't convert, when they become adults, they can't marry Jews. They won't be able to marry non-Jews either. And they can't marry anybody, which the Gemara says is a problem by a chatzi shivcha chatzi bat choren. I don't want to get into that case. Now, right, there is no greater, what's a tzatza mitakteket? What does mitaktek sound like? It's an English word. Tzatza mitakteket is a ticking bomb, right? Tzatza is a bomb, and mitakteket is tiktok, right? Mitaktek, to tiktok, right? It's like lifas bake, right? To Facebook. Okay, that is an actual word in Hebrew, right? Lifas bake, right? Same thing, litaktek is to tiktok. So it's a ticking time bomb. B'sofo shel davar, ho'il v'yeh kan sibur gadol she'en lo takana b'nisuen ha'davar alul l'grom l'kach she'natein efsharut v'zor n'lisunem v'zachim v'nav d'ar z'grom nezak atzum. He said, it might get so bad that the only other solution will be civil marriage, which he didn't support, right? So, or at least in this context. So you see already that he's setting up why this is a shot at chak. Now in the next paragraph, he notes, I'll skip it, but he notes that the case he brought up before, the chatzi shivcha chatzi bat chorin, who's half in servitude and half not, we force the master to free her because otherwise she can't marry anybody because she's half Jewish and half not Jewish. So he says, you see that we sometimes make communal positions to enable people to get married. This is something we care about. Skipping the next paragraph, v'akashir megarim gadol nizreshet haskama midat shelo. He said, look, and this is what I summarized before. He said, an adult, you need him to agree to convert, so it's not so easy. Ulam shone din akatan, but children are different. Al pi alacha lo nidrash haskama shel akatan legiur. Hovum gedar kshishin lo dat. A child doesn't have legal cognizance, legal intent. The ha'inu ena roen v'dogev al shikul dat maspik. Hagiur etzul katan nase midin zachin lakatan. The reason the way we convert him is by zechiyah. We assume this is to his benefit. Klomar, Beit Din Rasha, Laso Kamasa, Shuzhura Katan, Beit Din can do whatever it's to his benefit. Omna. He said, look, I'll admit. So here is where you got one of the meta arguments pushing back on him. He said, look, what are you going to tell me? You're going to tell me that the problem is that maybe claiming that being a Jew is a benefit, that's not true in this case. Why? He says, Barush et Megeru who's Gdola. Sharei Hunichna Tachan Hanafei Shchina. He said, look, Gerud is a benefit. You're now part of the Jewish people. You're under the auspices of God. Now you'll get reward for doing the mitzvah, which they're going to do. Some of them, at least. But he said, what's the counter argument? Right? And this was on the meta plane. A lot of people pushed back and said, it might work, but maybe it's not really a schut. Why? What are you going to say? Look, now he's a non-Jew. So if he violates Shabbat, well, he's allowed to. He's chayiv. He's not allowed to keep Shabbat when he's a non-Jew. If you convert him, now he's not going to be educated as a Torah Jew. He's probably going to grow up to be like his parents, who are not in any way shomer Torah or mitzvot. So yeah, he'll fast on Yom Kippur, but also drive to shul on Yom Kippur. You know, like what have you, right? Mahir vachta. He's going to violate all these avirot. So that's the counter argument, and he responds, "Ulam kol ze einu omer she'ein kan zchut." I would contend that that doesn't mean that there's no benefit. Adarabba, on the contrary, kil kal toshol to katan hita kanato. He said, look, I got this magic solution for you. Listen, you really claim he knows nothing about Torah? Great. So he's like any other not religious Jew who we defined as a tinok shenishba, right? As if they were captured, and therefore they're not fully responsible for their averot. So the mitzvah they do willingly. The averot, they're not really culpable. Now this is a huge chiddush, because you could say, look, someone is a born Jew, knows nothing about Torah, so you define him as a tinok shenishba, not as a willing sinner. But that's not an ideal category. Why would I put someone in that category lechatchila? But he's willing to say, no, that is enough to mitigate the guilt in his sins, such that his mitzvah will be considered willing, his avero not so willing, and it'll, in the long run, it'll be a schut, and therefore the Beit Din can convert him. Nimtza shegeruto shel hakatan, so it's only schut. It's true that many people were machmer and didn't do this. And they weren't sure that it was a schut. But he said it's not really the main halacha. They wanted to prevent intermarriage and insemination. And here you get an interesting argument which Rav Goren makes in a different way and so does Rav Unterman. He said, look, you've got to understand, and this is where you see his religious Zionism coming out. He says, look, in Chutz Laaretz, you're right. It's not in someone's benefit to be a Jew. He's not going to keep Torah. But in Israel, outside of Israel, the very identity of the Jewish community is in danger. And people intermarry and they leave and their kids leave, etc. But Israel's different. So I don't understand. Outside of Israel, it's one thing. But here, if you don't convert them, that's what will lead to intermarriage. Because they're going to marry the other Israeli Jews that they know. Right? Skipping to the end of the paragraph. Therefore, he says, Barur she'en lo siv se'agat v'zeirot b'nyan ha'giyur. So don't be overly cautious and make takano. Yesh la'mid al din ha'tilo. Let's follow the halacha. Let us convert them without any hesitating. Said, obviously, you have to do your best then to try to educate them. That's your responsibility. Skipping down to the next page now. Now he says, practically, it's easy. And I'll summarize this paragraph. He says, look, most people in Israel, Jew or not Jew technically, but who think they're Jewish, they already get a Brit Milah, right? So that's already, right? All you really need to do is get their parents to agree to Tvilah. And they don't have to be Mekabel Mitzvot. And if they want to come to when they're Bar Bat Mitzvot, they want to give up on the Mitzvot, they're allowed to. All you got to do is just ask the parents. And he says, look, a lot of them send to the religious schools. Remember, religious schools, mamlachti dati, are public schools, right? So a lot of them send them anyways. So it's unlikely that they're not going to, you know, that they're going to reject it, and they might even learn Torah. Next paragraph. And again, he comes back, and like I said, you see that he has certain things that motivate him here, right? He sees it as shadat chak, and the shadat chak is because he sees a value in the state and state-oriented halacha, which Dr. Aviad HaKohen has an excellent article on this, where he points out what it means for someone to be a religious Zionist posek, and one of them is that their psak often is actually affected by their belief in the value of the state and statehood, which is what you see going on here, he says. If you can convert them when they're young, right, you go on, you can create schools for them, they go to schools, and they go to Bnei Akiva or whatever, youth groups and the like, so there's even a chance that they will, right, that they will come back. And then in the next paragraph, and he says, said another meta concern he wanted to respond to was some people opposed because they said, oh, maybe conversion should be centralized. And you should take away autonomy from the individual Beit Din. And here he says, it is clear to me that there's no rule for such a law. That never happened. It never happened that all conversion needed to be by a central authority, and therefore, and he brings the story of Hillel who converted the people who came to his house. And he says, next paragraph, just let the people, the rabbis in their city, like it always was, let them make up their own but they didn't. Don't get involved. He said, they are more involved anyways with the people in their city. Next paragraph, this is a challenge of the first order, national, religious. It is forbidden for us to run away. We must turn to this and deal with it. Courts in every city for conversion of a kachit kayem, banu mehiram mikrasha kaduva v'yed kol achichem mikol agoyim, etc. So what I read, this is his piece, and I want to say a few methodological things here. So as I said, first of all, you get an idea of what it means to not just be a religious Zionist, but a religious Zionist posek, right? Where you see nationalistic state concerns as a shadat chak. Now he actually thinks this works halachically. He's not like coming up with some chiddush, but it's clear that what's motivating him, and he's explicit about this, are national religious concerns, which he thinks are legitimate. The second point is that, and I just gave a share on this to KMTT, that part of being a posek isn't just posketing in theory. It's trying to convince people. Remember, this was an opinion piece in a newspaper, right? And it's relatively high level, but the detail of the halacha is not so intricate. Because part of being a posek is not just Paskin is trying to get it done. And therefore, he needs to turn to the people and speak in a way that will resonate with the average person, not just Poskin. The third is you see his fearlessness, right? He's not afraid to take on what's clearly the chief rabbi here, right? He's saying, look, I don't care. You want to say it's under one authority? There's no such thing, right? Give me my authority and I'm going to do it. Those are some of the methodological points I think that come out. The next paragraph is wild, okay? This is from Tshuva Samach Tet in Siach Nachum. Here, so in the public piece, he said, why is this a schut, right? Since the whole category of Giur Ktanim functions based on schut, so why is it a schut? Aren't they going to not keep Torah? So there he says, look, they're like any other non-religious Jew. We don't hold them fully responsible for violating Yisurim, and they're going to do mitzvot, and they'll get mitzvot, so it's a schut. In the next paragraph, though, I'm going to summarize what he says, and then I'm going to read it. He says something really, really wild. Someone turned back to me and said, Ma pitom, they're going to violate Shabbos. How can you say that violating Shabbos isn't a big deal? So here's something else. It's a good thing to know about Rabinovich. So you at some point, you had a shear on electricity on Shabbos. No? Really? Oh, okay. Because Dr. Goldstein had told me specifically not to give shiur on electricity on Shabbos because you would definitely do it during the year. Because otherwise, that's something you have to cover. Okay. Maybe that's next week's shiur then. Okay.
A lot of things that we were supposed to cover during the year got cut out.
Ah, that's a good point. So maybe I'll do it next week because that's really an important topic for you to cover before you finish the year. You should have a good, you know, my son was asking me about it last Friday. So I as much as I could for a 7-year-old, outlined all major positions of the last 200 years. And he actually remembered them, which was impressive. He started like telling them back to my wife later. So this is an important topic to know. But it's very unclear why electricity is asur on Shabbat. Rebbe Rabinovich is of the opinion that it is a very weak dirabanan. Specifically, uvdin dechol, it's what you probably know as, it's not Shabbos dik. Right? It's not Shabbos dik. That's why electricity, not like, obviously certain things are d'oraisa. Like, if you use an electric lawnmower, it's usur, not because of the electricity, because you're cutting the, right, you're cutting the grass. Different problem, but the electricity is not the problem. And incandescent light bulb is a problem, but who has incandescent light bulbs? Right? Meaning, incandescent light bulbs are a problem because of the filaments, but yeah, no one has that. So he thinks it's uvdin dechol, and in just 2 years ago, he came out and really went farther with this, and he actually said that he thought that it was mutter, not just in hospitals and army bases to use, but like in general, to use electric key cards on Shabbos. He just thought it was mutter. He just didn't see an isser. So in this really wild paragraph in Siach Nachum Samachtet, and this is where I think you see just how much he believed that electricity wasn't a problem on Shabbos. And also I've argued in different contexts that you can't understand how wide reaching the implications of a psak are until you see it applied to conversion. Because once you start applying to conversion, it's hitting, you know, the very status of Jewishness. So here was this claim he makes in this tshuva, and he says, the person said to him, you said you don't want to convert them because they're not going to keep Shabbos. And here's what I got to say to you. Your problem is they're going to watch TV on Shabbos. He says, okay, and what's your point? He said, obviously you, great scholar, know, the last 100 years, over 100 years ago, when electricity started to become a thing, the poskim weren't sure that electricity was asur. I'm not telling you should do it, right? I'm not telling you to watch TV on Shabbos. But let me just remind you that there used to be good Jews, and here he pulls out his Yiddish. Shayna Eden, right? They were good. They were right. Shayna Eden. V'chol amuvanim. Shana gol pinzakam jokam gedolei galitza shekelu mod b'nei chashmal. Who were lenient on electricity? V'yom tov etir lagamrei. And yom tov, they just said it was mutter, which is a position of many poskim. Varei so gam lefi psikatenu yom lasur. Yeah. I know we poskim electricity is asur, 100%. He said, yeah. And tomorrow the Beit Din is going to come back. Sanhedrin is going to come back. Mashiach will come. You know that they're going to say electricity is asur? I'm not so sure. So he says, so watching TV, that's a reason not to convert him? It's not really asur. I mean, don't do it. But like, that's not a reason not to convert someone, which is an amazing comment, right? Because you see that some of his different major psakim influence each other. So this is what he said. Okay? Let me skip down a little bit. Okay? So let's look for a moment at it. This is his halachic piece. Right? This is his main tshuva. And here we'll get more of his halachic argumentation for it. Right here he summarizes the problem again, but here he quotes the Gemara. The main Gemara is the following, right? This is the halachic justification. Amar Rav Huna, ger katan matmilin al dat beit din. A child who's a minor converts, you convert him, through Beit Din. My Kamashwan, the Shurula. Why? Because it is a benefit. And you're allowed to benefit people not in front of them. Tanina, Zachan Ladim Shul Bafanav. Ve'inchal Ladim Shul Bafanav. You can do good for a person without him there, but not bad. So you might have thought that people want to be not Jewish and have less obligations. The Kaimalan, the Avat, Vadai Bevkir Nichalai, Kamashul Nanimili Gotol, the Tam Tam Yisurav Al Katan Shurulo. He said, yeah, if you grew up not Jewish, it's hard to give up on the Aver you did. But if you grow up Jewish, the Gemara says, no, it's a Shud. You've never tasted that Isser, so it's not something you feel the loss of. And he says that this Shud is only needed if the father doesn't come, but if the father converts with him, so then you might not even need that, because people want to do what their parents do. Okay. So next page, he says, now, one of the things you'll notice, and again, I'm doing this to really reconstruct how Rabbi Rabinovich thinks a little bit. He doesn't write huge tshuva, right? This is pretty short as tshuva go, especially on conversion. Conversion tshuva are like hundreds of pages. This is pretty short, and, you know, it's only as big as it is because it has wide margins, right? Right, it's like many words, not that many words. It's like, you know, in terms of if you were typing this up in normal size margins, 2-3 pages, right? 4 pages with this. Not so long for conversion. And that was very much his shita. He didn't like try to exhaust everything. He was very confident and he was very Rambam-esque, right? It's like, I write the halacha as I see it, take it or leave it, like move on, right? There is no, and that was really his position. So he quotes a Gemara and he says, that's it. So then he goes on, he says, Gir Bizman Azeh. So he says, many have asked, Eich Beidin, Eich Nidan LeBeidin Bizman Azeh Liskadek LeGir B'chlal Afil Shel Gedolim. Right? Many Rishonim asked, why are we allowed to convert people at all, even adults? We don't have smuchim, right? We don't have smicha, real smicha. Halo Beidin Shel Zman Azeh Eino Ela Beidin Shel Hetyoto. Right? We only have non-experts, Lashon HaTor, Dishlichu Tayu Kavdina. And the normal rule is that you're only allowed, that when you don't have real smicha, there are only two types of, there are two qualifications you need in order to paskin, to run a Beit Din. One is midi d'shchicha, something which is common, v'id b'chisaron kis, and has a loss of money. So like damages, right, monetary, if someone breaks your car, right, you know, car accident, that you can judge because it happens all the time and it's purely monetary. But you can't judge things which don't happen all the time, or are knas, right? Or punishment or fines, where there's no loss of money, right? We're obligating you to pay a fine, but there was no loss of money that you're compensating for. So all the Mefarshim asked, so why can you do conversion? Right? Conversion has neither. And again, I said, this is his much more formal piece. So he quotes from the Sma, because the Nira Li do Adin L'Sharan Yanim Gdolim. Anything which is really, really important, we got to do. Conversion is so important that even though it's not monetary and it doesn't happen so often, it's so important that that conversion, this institution exists, that you can do it even without smicha. That's how important it is. So next paragraph. So that shows you conversion is a big deal. And just like the importance of having courts so that loans could exist. That's true in general. We're not even dealing with a few people here. There are even a lot. This is mamish, a communal issue. If they're not converted, they can't marry Jews, they can't marry non-Jews. And then he quotes the same argument. The not being able to marry is terrible. And then he says, look at what our great master said. And this is very, you know, Kidarka Bakodesh, the Rambam. The Rambam says it's law, basically. You know, his sefer on the Rambam is called the Yad Pshuta. If you go through it, it's not like Lamdas. He basically takes the Rambam's positions and shows how many of the Gaonim felt the same way. So one of my neighbors, actually, some of you know him, right? Bitzal Daniel, Rabbi, the Dayan that you heard share from. He said he had a chavrusa for a while with Rabbi Rabinovich's grandson. And he never quite understood, like, what was the purpose of Yad Pshuta? Why is it called Yad Pshuta, right? Simple. And I mean, he said, basically, since the Rambam, you know, the Balei Tosfot became dominant. And therefore, we look at the Rambam, we think everything he says is a chiddush. Like, he was the outlier. And Rabbi Rabinovich was convinced that if you were aware enough of the texts that existed before the Rambam, like the earliest post-Talmudic text, the Gaonim, you'd realize that the Rambam is often in the majority. We're just not familiar with the positions of those that the Rambam is following. And he wrote the book to show that the Rambam is mainstream and not a maverick in everything, and therefore should be followed. Right? That was basically the point of the book. And therefore, he often just follows the Rambam. And he says, Reish Gadav, Rabbeinu Agadol, look what the Rambam says. And, right? Kofed et Rabbam Meshachera. Right? That we force the master of this servant to free her so that she can get married. And he extends it into other cases. Okay. And then skipping down, he says, "Ve'afal pishuk dolim mechmir v'darach harnim lo legayir aktanim." Even though there were people who were machmir on this, kim right, kim tanim v'nivazim, even with children, unless under very limited circumstances, ve'gaduk darim shonim v'azeh, and they put many limitations. Alo parosh kolay leinim el chashash obama. Those were only concerns. Shemayim eker adin in yan gadol legiur, because it's a big deal. Right, it's important. The counterweight is that it's important. And then he says, and some said, said some people said, oh, but they're not going to learn Torah, so it's not a schut. But he says, if you look at Tosfot says, he said, now look at Tosfot. Tosfot said, this is not a normal schut. It's a super schut. Right? It's a super schut. Because it is a schut that he now is a Jew. That's what it is. And again, you see, he's very minimalist on sources, right? He takes the sources. He says, look, don't confuse me. There's a Gemara, there's a Rambam, there's a Tosfot. There's a halachic argument here. It's clear. It's barur. Chik-chak. I don't care if this tshuva is about Gerut that affects all of Klal Yisrael. 3-4 pages, show you the main sources. I'm going to tell you why I think is right. Take it or leave it, right? That was very much his psak. He was like the opposite of Mori Barabi, Rav Lichtenstein, where everything was, well, you could say it this way, you could say it that way, and even if you say it this way, there's 2 sub-questions, and this way, right? And everything was like that. Rav Rabinovich was the exact opposite. It was like, here's my derech. You want your own derech? Good. You can have your derech, but this is my derech, right? This is what I think is right. So he says, Klomar, Kevan she'en kan inyan shel shchiyav gerigila. This is a normal benefit. This doesn't require it to, for, right? This is formally schud. Agirut chalom mikol makom. It applies. Hagmara ma'alad sheila schud. Rak b'nei shein ra'ul v'etin lasok b'tvarim sheim chovel v'nei adam. He said the schud here. The reason the Gemara is asking is because you shouldn't do something that's bad for people. But beitin ra'ul lev the vokapi hem shel yitomim. The beitin has every right to act as the fathers of these children. And that's what Rashi says. V'heinasin lem av. Klomar, keman shem eker adin beitin yachon legayer goy katan. V'keven shela hachniz nevesh achat agav gan v'esh china zel inyan gadol. Since beitin can do it, and it's important. L'fichach ra'u le beitin lachniz asman v'dar zel esod av. So you have to do it. Done. Right? And he says, aye, and you'll tell me you shouldn't do it when there's a chova. Right? So skipping now, he said, there is no chova. What do you want from my life? It's a chova. Becoming a convert is a zchut. I'll prove it to you. The end of Makot says, Ratzak HaKadosh Baruch Hu zakot et Yisrael. God wanted to benefit the Jews. And how does the Rambam understand that? The Rambam says, "Machbat ribui mitzvot, iefshar shlo yase adam achat b'chol yamei chayav v'shleimut." The Rambam understands that line to mean that God gave us 613 mitzvot because it's impossible that at some point in your life you didn't do at least one mitzvah sincerely. And with that, yizkei l'ashrana nefesh b'oto amasa. And with that, your soul will exist forever. That's enough to give a certain eternity to your soul. He says, you see, right? One mitzvah is the schut that the Torah describes, that the Mishnah describes Judaism as. And then you'll tell me, oh, what about the Averot? Zeno, Kilgadok, right? As he said before, no. Because if he knows nothing about Averot, so then he's a Tinuk Shanishma. Don't worry about it. And then section 3. Amnam aroe yireh v'kama tshuvot shegdolei haposkim v'darach ronim shekpikpiku b'zchut ha-giyor. Right, he said, but there are all these people who didn't think it was a good idea. Quotes the Sridi H. Enol l'moschot ha-leilu sh'nasu n'achriot. Adar rabba alinu l'drachek nem l'ibadel mehem. He says, that was only bigola, as we saw before. That was in Galut. They were right, because it wasn't their benefits. But here, right, it is in their benefit. We saw that already. And then he says, Muvan me'lav shacharei shebeidin megayer ktanim v'kach na'aseh lehem av, sarech l'deber zorchem ruchim. Right? You should obviously deal with them spiritually, etc. Aval b'shum ofen lenda meitanim ke'elo acherim le'etzem yuri yeladim. You shouldn't try to stop it as an institution. Yes, I agree with you, Abigail. Right, to say that it's a little bit weird to say that the mitzvah, they get the schar, but not the averot, that is an argument that that Dov Linzer made, right? Which is that if you really believe Tinok Shanishba, then it's really weird, because what you should say is you're not really responsible for your averot, but you don't really get full credit for your mitzvah either if you think you're just the product of circumstance. And therefore, he argued that he argues for a different category, because he thinks Tinok Shanishba is patronizing that way, even to religious Jews, right? I mean, what does it say? If you say, well, non-religious Jews, they're totally not responsible for anything they do, so does that mean that religious Jews, we didn't make a choice to be religious, we were just born in it, so, you know, it's not, you know, we can't take credit, right? But Rabinovich isn't bothered by this. So then, l'sikum, ikara din mutar l'gayer k'tanim b'zman hazeh, nagura poskim nava b'ikar m'chshah shel bolut. You're allowed to do this. The people opposed it was because of assimilation. On the concern that people would try to intermarry, but you know, cover it up by converting their children. But in Israel, it's the opposite. We're talking about real assimilation. And again, a lot of the things that you saw in his public piece, you see here as well, right? The concern about national things, being convinced that this is a schut, that this is necessary, that we shouldn't add extra chumrot. What you see as well, though, is his derech ha-psak, right? His derech ha-psak is not like Rav Ovadia Yosef. I'll give you 10,000 sources that I'm right, right? He didn't need that. His derech ha-psak is, look, if I think I'm right because of key sources, you know, Gemara, basically, what did he prove his point with? A Gemara, a Rambam, a Tosfot, a Rashi, and a Sma. Right, if you sort of boil down his main arguments, right? He's like, look, here's a kav chashiva, here's a way of poskening. I think it's right. Don't you want to tell me you could challenge it? Okay, but I think you're wrong, right? Here's my justification. I think it's right. And Rivioni, when he was giving his mini discussion of Rabinovich, he said, Rabinovich's derech of psak is just b'seichel hayashar, right? That was all he said. You need to be able to think straight. And once you think straight, you say it as it is. That was his derech, right? He didn't try to do pilpulim, right? The way the Ed Psak was, you think in a clear way, you develop a cogent argument that compels you, and once you're there, done. That's how he paskin. And you see that certain of the same sort of meta points come up in his halachic piece, as well as his public policy piece. And I do think that this is a good sort of glimpse into the way he thought as a posek, as a communal figure, the meta values that he took as took into account, and the type of and just his derech ha-psak and his conviction to do what he thought was right, and you know, the lack of hesitation he had, and the lack he felt, the need he needed to sort of, you know, throw a million sources, right? He went to the primary sources, read the sugya as he saw it, and you know, we've talked about the different ways post gemara. Right, he's not a Rebbe Ovadia posek that piles up precedent, and he's not cared so much about minhag. Right, he goes to the sugya, and the main precedent that he takes is important, and yalla, right, that's how he paskins. In the few minutes, let's just look at some of the opposition. And here's a summary from Rav Uri Bitzalel Fisher, from an organization that really opposed it, the Rabbanei Derech Emunah. Now he acknowledges that, right, this is a Giyur Masirat Medina, right? This is a storm in the country, etc. But here's his responses. One, Hatana Shef Shalagar Gimel Af Oreim Shinom Shem Tar Mitzvot, Enam Muskem Legamai. He said, the notion that you're allowed to convert children without their parents also converting is a machloket achronim. Because the language of the Gemara is his father brings him. So the question is, do you understand that to be dafka or not? Right? And he said, the reason that he's allowed to reject his Judaism when he's bar bat mitzvah or she's bat mitzvah is because you're not sure it's chut, right? Whether it's chut, you have to wait to the bar mitzvah to find out. So if he protests, and he says, maybe that's why some of the Achronim think, unlike Rabbi Rabinovich, that you need to have the parents convert. Because otherwise, how can you say it's a schud? It's a schud if your family becomes Jewish, so then it's a schud, and you're going to be raised in mitzvot. But here, you know, he doesn't think that this is true. Now, he says, right, you could say that you could take the position essentially like Rabinovich, that as long as they don't actively reject their Judaism, so that's enough as an acceptance. But Rav Fisher says, no. He says, I don't think that this is, they accepted the mitzvot and they need to actively negate it. I think that the question of their Kabbalat mitzvot hangs in abeyance until they become bar mad mitzvah, and then is solidified if they follow a Torah lifestyle. If you formulate it that way, so then kishalo nahag minag yadut mishagdil aval nahag minag yadut, right? But then if he didn't actively act as a Jew, then even without an active rejection, it wouldn't work. So therefore, he argues that based on that, the fact that they're not going to keep the Torah and their parents aren't converting, he thinks that at their bar mitzvah, at the very least, it'll dissipate because there was no kabbalah and a mitzvah. And he notes that Rav Kook says this in Shuddat Kohen, and I bolded the key lines, that he wrote, the katvu, the kabbalah and mitzvot nigmeret, hi kishagadal v'lo micha. The kabbalah mitzvot is only finished when he becomes an adult and doesn't protest, which sounds like it hangs in abeyance, which means that he needs to prove himself to be a shomer mitzvah, which he's not going to be. And therefore, continuing in the bolded part, harei chaser koach hakabbalah shel mitzvot legamrei ben kan gerut. And therefore, right, if he doesn't accept, there is, right, the kabbalat mitzvot of the Beit Din is negated. Dehech lo nitkayru b'ratzon tov kim mipachat ki garei arayov v'agirut lo haya legamrei. And if he did it because he was afraid, right, it wouldn't work. Dainu shelo haya kabbalat mitzvot karei lo havi gerum klal, etc. And he says not only that, he thinks, he notes in the Sridei Eish that Rabbi Rabinovich rejected is that it's a chov gamur, that it's a chov to bring these people. And then he goes farther and he says, even if you could make an argument in both directions, so he says, based on Rav Moshe Feinstein and Igret Moshe and Ezra Dalet Chavav, shalachin afu suffix chut vadai, v'afim lo yitgalu liyot shomrim istaber shu zchut derishe Yisrael yishlam derishe Yisrael. He says Rav Moshe could be like Rav Rabinovich, where he says if it's a suffix, it's fine, because at the end of the day, the aver will be tinek shenishba, and the mitzvah will be mitzvah. But he says he's not sure that's true. So that's one argument as well. Argument two, he says, is that you bring a lot of sveikot. Right, and he just says, look, right, if they don't keep the Torah, right, you're bringing up this machlok as achronim, right? He said, even if you paskin the other way, why would you actively enter into a suffix of whether the fact they don't keep Torah makes them non-Jews? Now, he notes that Rav Avram Stav, that's Rav David Stav's son, notes that the Chassam Sofer thinks that if the parents bring the child to convert, maybe they actually can't reject their conversion. And he argues that that's not true, right? And that's not how we paskin. Okay. Fourth point he makes is that it's clear from a lot of the poskim that they're doing this because they see a sharat chak. But he says, really? Is it a sharat chak? He says, why? There's so few people who are totally chasrei dat, who don't care about religion, right? There are very few people who don't care about religion at all. And many of the people who choose to actually care about marrying Jews go through real conversion as adults. Some of these people end up marrying Jewish women, so their children are going to be Jewish anyways. So yeah, right, Rabinovich himself isn't trying to stop first generation. I mean, he's not trying to convert the adults. So he says, look, if you're already not trying to convert the adults, you're already cutting out the half of the population, because the parents, you're letting them remain non-Jews anyways. So they're going to intermarry one way or the other. And there's a 50% chance that, right, if the non-Jew is the man, that the children will be Jewish anyways. So the second generation is not a problem. So, right, that cuts out half the problem. For, he said, in general, in the mitziut is that the women, right, women from the Soviet Union are much more likely to actually convert sincerely, just statistically, what we've seen in Israel. So he said that minimizes the problem yet further. Five, how many people you actually can convert that's going to help, right? I mean, in order to argue this is a shas hatzchak and you're going to solve a big problem, you have to be able to prove that you're going to solve the problem writ large. But there's hundreds of thousands of people and you're not getting hundreds of thousands of converts. So even if you succeeded in 10,000 or 20,000, right, there's still going to be 100,000 that are creating problems, right? So you still haven't solved it. Point five he makes is that we're also part of a country that cares about the Haredim. And the Haredim are never going to accept it. And by going through with this, you're cutting off the religious Zionist world from the Haredi world. And that's a meta point you have to take into account. Point six is there's other ways of dealing with the assimilation problem, maybe minimizing how many of these people move in. Okay? Point seven is it's a Chilul Hashem, he thinks, because you're declaring, even if technically you can come up with a way that you don't need Kabbalah Hol Mitzvot, he says you're still making a statement that you can be Jewish by being Israeli even without a Torah Jew, right? Meaning even if formally it works, the statement you're making to the world is that authentic Kabbalah Mitzvot is not integral to what it means to be a Jew. And that, he thinks, is a real problem, especially since he thinks, right, conversion is, and then his last point is that conversion really is a communal issue. And therefore, you really need wide consensus of the leaders, and, you know, you can't just do it by yourself. So for those reasons, so that's really the pushback. But as we've seen, right, Rabinovich is not concerned because he doesn't think this needs to be everyone accepting it. You know, he really does want this to be the national solution, so he may admit that it might not become, but he's trying to get it there. And as we saw, Rabinovich is much less afraid of Sveiko. He's willing to say, yeah, there's a Safik, but this is how I paskin. But at least with these two articles, you've at least seen, you know, Rabinovich's size, and then the last 10 minutes, we've at least seen some of the pushback. Obviously, as I said, this wasn't meant to be a comprehensive shiur on the topic, but rather to try to get a little bit of a glimpse of the way Rabinovich thought as a posek, communally, as a religious Zionist posek, just the way he approached halacha and the state in one of his most famous ones. And Tokede, we also got in his the tip of the iceberg of his position on electricity. So at least I've accomplished, I think, my goal for tonight, which was at least to explore one major position of Rabbi Rabinovich and his personality as a posek and a leader. And with that, we'll say Yehi Zichro Baruch. And I guess maybe we'll do election. Or do you want to do electricity on Shabbos next week, the overview? Because, okay, I had promised I wouldn't do it because you said you were going to do it, but it is one of those things. I said, of all the things that you have to do before the end of the year, you do have to do this topic. Just Dr. Goldstein had assured me you would do it with somebody else. But if that's not the case, then I will, I'll check with her if that's going to be one of the other shiurim the next, like, 2.5 weeks. If it's not, then I'll do it next week. Okay. Good. Have a good Shabbos. And I